Tonight's presentation is by Mao Khoa Sal, who is visiting us from Cambodia. Mao works with the refugee camp that is located in Thailand for exiled Cambodians. And Mao works, was it vice president of the agricultural educational program for that refugee camp?
Khoa Sal.
Yeah. Okay, we'll call. The family name is Mao, and the person name is Khoa Sal. What I'm going to read first is a paper that has been jointly written by Khoa Sal and Nancy and Bill Hall and myself, and it's titled Kampuchea and the Future of the Khmer People. The country of Cambodia is located in Southeast Asia and is bordered by Vietnam, Laos, Thailand, and the Gulf of Thailand. The word Cambodia is actually of French origin, left from colonial occupation of Cambodia. The official title and correct name of this country is the People's Republic of Kampuchea. Ironically, the name Kampuchea has been called Oasis of Peace, even though for many years it has been a place of turmoil and war. Phnom Penh is the capital. Kampuchea is chiefly a farming nation, with most of the population living on the fertile plains among the rivers. These plains cover about one-third of the land, and forests cover much of the rest. Most farms are small with few modern tools. Kampuchea has few factories and must import most of the manufactured goods it needs. The people of Kampuchea, called the Khmer, come from an ancient empire that ruled over much of Southeast Asia from the capital of Angkor, a city of magnificent sculpture and architecture. Even today, this ruined city retains much of its original grandeur, even though there is much global concern over its deterioration. From this empire came the peoples of Kampuchea and also of Thailand. By contrast, the people of Vietnam are of Chinese origin. The Angkor Empire and the Khmer people remained largely unified until the 15th century, when various conflicts with neighboring countries and internal wars of succession began to whittle away at the cultural, economic, and political integrity. These conflicts continued into the 19th century until King Norodom I accepted the French protectorate and the Khmer people became subject to French administration. The French colonial period was characterized by relative peace and stability, but did little to restore the spirit of the Khmer people. In fact, even after the withdrawal of the French administration in 1945, the monarchy government led by Prince Sihanouk still maintained much of the colonial, administrative, industrial, and economic infrastructure. Even though there was relatively little economic exploitation, there was still a strong disparity between values of the more traditional society of the countryside and the largely westernized society of the cities. And it was from this disparity that the Khmer Rouge developed, a group of Khmer people supported by China and Vietnam who introduced another Western ideology, Marxism, to justify eliminating the infrastructure and people of the cities. However, before the Khmer Rouge came to power, the government of Prince Sihanouk was overthrown in a military coup by Lon Nol in 1970. Lon Nol's forces were used by the United States in the U.S.-Vietnam War and against the growing forces of the Khmer Rouge. In April of 1975, the Khmer Rouge seized power in Phnom Penh, and the guerrillas led by Pol Pot tried to create a primitive agrarian society by evacuating the cities and killing hundreds of thousands of Khmer people in labor camps. The cooperation between the Khmer Rouge and Vietnam was not long-lived. Vietnam entered Kampuchea in 1978 to stop the Khmer Rouge border attacks and drove them to the Thai border area. In 1979, Vietnam installed the government of President Heng Samrin, and since that time, the government of Kampuchea has been under the control of Vietnam. It is not difficult to see that the foreign manipulation of the French, Americans, and Vietnamese, as well as internal oppression of the Khmer Rouge, have led to a fragmented and demoralized country. Vietnam has been systematically colonizing Kampuchea for their own advantage. Better resources, abundant food and land. Vietnam has many physical disadvantages with their own area. Vietnam traditionally has a yearly famine, floods, and storms that attract hundreds of thousands to relocate to Kampuchea. Vietnam is also under economic recession that has undermined its own standard of living. Kampuchea is presently supplying much food to the Vietnamese. In order to achieve the Vietnamization of Kampuchea, the Vietnamese exercised a new colonialism by installing a Khmer authority within the government framework. All decisions, however, must be approved through Hanoi or their representatives, making the Kampuchean leadership a puppet government of Vietnam. Since the Vietnamese took control, parts of two provinces have been conceded to Vietnam. Many consider Kampuchea now to be a second Vietnam in appearances, businesses, and in all walks of life. Some provinces contain more than twice the amount of Vietnamese as Kampucheans. In the process of deculturating and exploiting Kampuchea, Vietnam has a policy of hostile destruction to the people, land, and resources of Kampuchea. Any trade that Kampuchea makes abroad has to be approved by Vietnam or its representatives. Vietnam sets the price of the cost of purchased products and even with whom they may trade. Items of value to Vietnam are only allowed to be traded with Vietnamese. Some items that would receive a high price on the world market are priced at a very low cost to the Vietnamese. For example, rubber costs $800 per ton on the world market, but the Vietnamese purchase it from Kampuchea for $225 a ton. That's just a little more than one-fourth of the world market cost. The USSR ruble is the currency used for foreign exchange with Kampuchea, and 3 rubles roughly equals $1. Because of this, all trading is banned except in certain communist countries, and only then through Vietnamese representation. Vietnam continues to export Kampuchean products and natural resources which have high quality, value, and price that are sold at a high price on the world market, but those profits are not received by Kampuchea. When goods are sold to Vietnam, Vietnam sets the price and repays usually in materials of unsatisfactory quality and in very poor condition, and usually pays the balance due on credit. Some materials that Vietnam provides to Kampuchea include sweaters, nails, cement, beer, soy sauce, many other products. Vietnam, however, never furnishes goods to Kampuchea in adequate numbers as required by the agreement between the two countries. Even so, Vietnam is heavily indebted to Kampuchea. In 1984, the Vietnamese debt to Kampuchea was in excess of $1.5 million. It's rather hard to conclude whether Kampuchea is now a real Khmer country or merely an extension of Vietnam. Hundreds of thousands of Vietnamese live in Phnom Penh, bringing their language, culture, and business with them. In the country, Vietnamese, quote, fishing experts supervise the Khmer people's fishing efforts and reap the profits of the sales. In addition to the fisheries of Kampuchea, other resources have been exploited by the Vietnamese. Both forest and fish were destroyed in the Tonle Sap Lake. Is that Tonle?
Yeah,
Tonle Sap Lake, where flooded forest areas shelter spawn-laying fish at high tide. It has been consistently forbidden to cut down these trees or plants in the area. However, the Vietnamese gathered the Khmer people to clear and cut down the trees and the vegetation. In another similar area, in the Kandal province, Vietnamese came in and cut down 90% of the trees in the flooded forest area. The local Khmer authorities were unable to stop them, for the Vietnamese all had guns and opened fire on the district militiamen. At the time of the destruction of the Tonle Sap Lake forest, tens of thousands of Khmer people were herded to clear and cut down the forests on the Kampuchean-Thai border. Some of this material, ironically, was used to create the spiked border wall between Kampuchea and Thailand, which is a dangerous mind barrier for many Khmer people who have tried to escape the oppression in Kampuchea. The Vietnamese government in Kampuchea also exploits the Khmer people for its own military purposes. Khmers are forced to be in the Vietnamese-directed army. Forcible gathering of Khmer people for military service occurs frequently. For example, at a school called Prek Eng, a group of Heng Samrin soldiers drove trucks into the school and forcibly inducted the school children into the army. Many of the children tried to escape, running away and trying to climb over fences. Some of the children who did not escape were caught, thrown into the truck, and taken away to the army. Those children who escaped were so intimidated that they never returned to the school, and even did not dare return to their homes. They escaped to other towns or villages, or else to hide in the jungle. Many people, then, who disagree with the Vietnamese are tortured, killed, or imprisoned. Mao Kosal himself has been sentenced to 15 years in prison for political resistance. Many of his friends are imprisoned now. Not many of them return from imprisonment. Mao Kosal and his family, like many others, escaped Thailand to one of four refugee camps. Even at the refugee camps, the Khmer people do not escape the brutality of the Vietnamese. The camps have been shelled by Vietnamese troops in the past. Site 2, that is the second of four refugee camps which Kosal is from, has been shelled since he left, and he has not yet heard the condition of his family. Site 2 refugee camp is the largest refugee camp with 173,000 people. It is located within the Thailand border. The camps are supported by the United Nations, the Catholic Relief Organization, Youth Mission, and the American Refugee Committee, and the International Red Cross. One of the primary goals within the camp is educating and training the exiled Khmer people for their return to Cambodia. Training and teaching at the site ranges from primary and high school to teaching technical, administrative, and agricultural specialties. Mao Kosal is vice president of the Agricultural Education and Training Committee, which administers the agricultural school. This agricultural school is divided into four programs: crop farming, animal husbandry, forestry, and fisheries management. Students entering the agricultural school go through a 1 to 2 week orientation that provides a basic knowledge of farming tools and techniques. Following the orientation, the second 8-month section teaches advanced knowledges of one of these programs. For those students who would go on managing and developing agricultural projects, a third session lasting 12 months would prepare them for this task. Students in the agricultural program extend knowledge to others. The different schools also share staff with other programs. Site 2 refugee camp will also be extending their knowledge and training skills to other refugee camp sites. The list of subjects needing to be taught goes on and on. Such subjects as meteorology, agricultural geography, rural economics, conservation of natural resources, fertilizers and pesticides, irrigation and water management, home gardening, machinery, and so on and so on. Kosal and his people need individuals with skills to help teach and educate. Materials and textbooks are also needed for this program. The problems in Kampuchea and Southeast Asia have not been completely ignored by the global community. Following the Vietnam invasion, the United Nations recognized a coalition government of the Khmer Rouge and the deposed Sihanouk monarchy sponsored by the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. The United Nations has continuously denounced the Vietnam presence, and in 1988 it further denounced the return to power of the Khmer Rouge. Negotiations within Kampuchea itself are made extremely difficult because the United Nations does not recognize the existing Vietnamese-backed government in Kampuchea. Presently, the resistance government of Kampuchea is called the Coalition Government of Democratic Kampuchea and is recognized by the Association of Southeast Asian Nations and the United Nations. Members of the Coalition Government of Democratic Kampuchea include the Khmer People's National Liberation Front, the Khmer Rouge, and the Royalist Party of Prince Sihanouk. Sihanouk is currently the president of the Coalition Government. In February 1989, the coalition government called for a plan for a 2,000-member United Nations peacekeeping force to supervise the withdrawal of all Vietnamese troops and government influence, and to facilitate installing a four-party coalition government comprising the three existing members of the coalition government and the present government that is in Kampuchea. Already, Cambodia's future does look brighter because Vietnam is discussing withdrawal for the first time. There is much in the world community can do to help the conflict in Kampuchea. Strong attention and support of the United Nations is vital, especially for the presence of an international peacekeeping force to supervise the Vietnamese withdrawal and to ensure order between the factions of the coalition government. Letters to the United Nations could be addressed for continued support of refugee camps, to aid stopping bombing of the camps, and to continue talks for a peace accord that calls for the withdrawal of Vietnam. In addition, support of the relief organizations helping the Khmer refugees in Thailand is necessary, and eventually these organizations will need to extend their efforts into Kampuchea. Kampuchea's future ought to be in the hands of its people, and it will rely heavily on the education and support that will enable the country to be rebuilt. The fragmentation of the Khmer people and their leaders is extreme, but it's not hopeless. With help from the international community, Kampuchea will be able to obtain self-determination, bringing peace and stability to this ravaged land and people. That is the presentation of what we have put together. I'd like to describe to you a little bit about the history and sort of the timeline to give you an idea of what all that information and how it fits in. You can sort of look at this graph showing time in terms of, and it's not a linear graph, from the origins back here of the Angkor Empire many, many centuries ago up to present time. And the Angkor Empire, as was described, was a very prosperous empire, and it grew in cultural and economic development until much of that internal struggle and internal struggle for succession and the various raids with other countries sort of peaked and then started to decline. And it reached a low point in 1886 when then they opted for the French protectorate and became a French colony. And indeed there was some growth in the cultural and economic development during that time. Even after the time the French it was given up as a French colonial status and was then under the monarchy rule of Prince Sihanouk. However, even though at that time the French were no longer supervising or administering that colony, much of the infrastructure that they left behind was still very active, even though it was run by Prince Sihanouk. And that happened until 1970, when there was that military coup by Lon Nol. And that sort of started the decline because they were at war with Vietnam and also with the Khmer Rouge. And then in 1975, the Khmer Rouge took power and it just went downhill very rapidly because the Khmer Rouge completely evacuated the cities, virtually destroyed much of the business and intelligentsia that were in the cities. And this sort of persisted until Vietnam came in. And when Vietnam came in, they did restore industry in the cities, but again, it was their own industry. And since that time, there has been a slow growth in economic development and cultural development, but principally that's been Vietnamese economics and Vietnamese culture. So even still at the present time, much of the Khmer people and the Kampuchean culture remains largely fragmented. It's people like Kosal and another organization that is presently expatriated in Thailand that is trying to keep alive the culture and the spirit of the Khmer people. One other thing of note that I might make mention of is that this most recent Time magazine does have an article about what's presently happening in Kampuchea, and it does speak of some of the hopefulness right now of some of the things that are happening in that area. Vietnam talking about, yeah, we will consider, let's talk about withdrawing from this area. Let's see. It also talks about Sihanouk and some of the rapport that is starting to happen with the government in Kampuchea. I don't think it makes mention in here, but I read somewhere recently that I think it's on the 15th of this month that there is going to finally be a meeting of some of the parties concerned, probably the coalition government, representatives of the coalition government, and representatives of the Vietnamese-backed government in Kampuchea, to start looking at how the withdrawal is going to take place, how to bring a peacekeeping accord into place. So I commend this article to you to read, to get another perspective about what's happening in Kampuchea. And with that, I'd like to open up any questions that you might have. Certainly direct them to COSAL. And keep them, of course, as clear as you can.
I have a question. Why did Pol Pot annihilate the cities? And, that's the question.
Why Pol Pot?
Why did he annihilate the cities, move the cities out and kill?
Because when they keep the educated people, most of the educated people not support Pol Pot. So as he want to get the power as long as he can, he must kill all of them and motivate the countryside people to get power in some portion.
Yeah. Another thing that I read into it, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed that there was a lot of strife built up over the years of the French colonization, and the Khmer Rouge has actually been around for a very, very long time, and it's always been against the colonialization, which was largely embodied in the very westernized cities. Does that also seem to make sense?
Well, then he was, Pol Pot was striking out against colonization or colonialization.
He was striking out against colonialization, industrialization. To a large extent, I believe that the borders were closed at that time when Pol Pot came into power. And I believe even the currency of exchange changed, and it was a currency that was not recognized in the foreign market.
Why is Vietnam willing to consider pulling out of Cambodia at this time?
Most of the Khmer people, that 50% they believe in Vietnam, will withdraw its troops from Cambodia. The reason that the Vietnamese willing to withdraw its troops because they don't get much aid that he requests to the foreigner. So his country is poorer and poorer. And he want to increase the production in his country, so he want to withdraw it through. But the Khmer people still don't believe in Vietnam.
So that you're speaking of the Vietnamese leader?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why we ask the international peacekeeping force to control at the time that Vietnam withdraw its troops from Cambodia. He is the witness.
Kasol, I'm wondering how the Kampucheans view the U.S. intervention into Vietnam during the 60s and 70s, and how that has changed your country's relationship with the Vietnamese.
From 1960?
Yeah, the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
That the U.S. was involved in.
Yeah.
How does your country view that intervention? How do your people view that?
Most power is belong to the leader. Not we have different from here.
Mm-hmm.
Because the power is the in hand of the leader, and the people cannot say anything. The government want to do, they can do, but the people want to do, they cannot do. Yes, at that time. So the decision is belong to the president or the prince who govern the government. So at that time, we have the conflict with the communists, that means the Vietnam, China, Russia. They want control Indochina. And at that time, United States involved in the war, Vietnam War. So the Prince Rodong Sihanouk, he belonged to China. So the, at that time, the relationship between US and South Vietnam is cut down.
Not clear. It's Kusaw.
Yeah.
Were the people angry at the U.S. for supporting and being involved in the Vietnam War?
At that time, the people don't angry with the United Nations because they come to help up. Yeah.
I think the thing that's unclear is that Sihanouk aligned with China.
Yeah.
Before he was overthrown.
Yeah.
And that was at the time the United States was in South Vietnam.
Yeah.
I guess what do you suppose that Sihanouk's rationale was for that, since previously he was pretty much maintaining ties with the West, but then all of a sudden he aligned with China?
I don't know really, because the topology that Sihanouk just shake hand with the communists, and they don't
the Chinese
and they cut down the relationship with United Nations. It's his idea, not the our people idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't long after that that Lon Nho.
And when he made the relationship with the communists,
uh-huh.
the Russian with China, mm-hmm. with Vietnam, mm-hmm. North Vietnam.
Yeah.
So the people, the economy in the country is poorer and poorer. Yeah. At that time, we have the coup d'etat.
The what?
Yeah.
Coup d'etat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, with the.
By.
Lenin.
Yeah. And when they were successful and they have the relationship with United States again, mm-hmm. in that time.